Come plan your dream wedding all in one day at the 17th Annual Newport Bridal Show on March 3rd. Meet with more than 80 top wedding professionals at two of Newport's most romantic venues, Rose Cliff and Ocean Cliff Mansions. Visit NewportBridalShow.net to buy your ticket today.
So I'll just start off with what we've been focused on to improve the program. I think we all know that we've acknowledged publicly the service issues and take full responsibility for those and regret that there were transition issues. But we have taken swift action. We've increased local staff. We are currently, the phone stats are in 100% compliance with the contract. I think last week our average speed to answer was 20 seconds.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And we've actually been meeting with advisory groups and associations, and everybody's acknowledged the improvement on the phone lines. We actually also listen to, we record all our calls, and we listen technologically to all our calls. So we can hear what any caller is saying on the phone, and we transcribe that into data to take action on it. So we can hear, are there process issues? Are there repeat service issues? And we take that information and we inform our process changes, and we've done that. But last week, we actually had 600 callers state they were happy with our service. You know, they were pleased with the customer service. We also, you know, when we added staff, we added dedicated staff to various stakeholders. So we've added staff directly for facilities and their own phone line. We've added staff for transportation providers and their own phone line. And so they've also expressed that call handling time has improved, and we've opened up the office in the evening for training of transportation providers and weekends to really work one-on-one with some of these smaller transportation providers that were struggling with technology. And we've seen great results. We've seen compliments back from some of those providers. We still want to acknowledge there's still service issues. You know, there always is transportation. You know, a provider can get overbooked. He can have a driver call out. He can have a vehicle have a flat tire. There could be traffic in the city, right? So they can get behind. So we are moving to 100% GPS tracking of all vehicles by 4/1. We're currently at 60%. And what's also exciting is that we've given facilities a portal so they can see their trips. They can see their trips scheduled out in advance, which transportation provider they've assigned to, their preferred provider. And then they can track where the vehicle's at, the GPS on-time performance. So everybody will be using the same information and same data. And then we'll be working with providers that to make sure they're on time, that they're not no-showing appointments, that they're providing proper assistance to individuals. As a result of everything improving, we're using less Lyft vehicles. We know that's been a concern not only of facilities for member assistance, but also transportation providers, because they don't want to see their livelihood taken away.
Right.
So we're down to 1% of trips being scheduled on Lyft. And just to put numbers in perspective, we're handling over 5,000 sedan and wheelchair trips. And then we're handling about 2,000 calls a day. And that's the 5,000 per day as well. So we're down to 1% of 5,000, which would be 50 Lyft trips. And we're eventually trying to move completely away and use the network for their short notice trips and the turnbacks and all of those things. And to that effect, we're adding two dispatchers locally to cover 5 a.m. to into the evening. And then we have a scheduler who will be, you know, working one-on-one with those providers to make sure their areas are configured, if they're adding vehicles, subtracting vehicles, make sure the system's configured correctly with them and working one-on-one with them. Also, we've helped them with payments, helping them claim and teaching them side by side how to claim trips. And also for credentialing, we've, hand in hand, we're working with them to load that information in the system. So by and large, I think where we're at is stability. We obviously still have the hangover effect of the service issues. And it's not to say, again, that there's no service issues, but we take each one of those service issues, we research it from end to end to see where the breakdown is and where is there a root cause issue. We're really focused, and that's why we've turned it around so quickly, is what are the root cause issues and putting solutions in place for those root causes.
So what happened? How did it get so messed up?
You know, a lot of people ask that because, you know, if you were to Google MTM prior to this, you really wouldn't see service issues in other states. You might see one random article here or there, not to say we didn't have any press, but you wouldn't see systemic problems or rollout issues. And we even recently rolled out in another state with a very scaled back model because, you know, we're always being driven to be more efficient. You know, states want, you know, more transportation for less cost. Right. And so our job is to be as efficient as possible. I think in hindsight, we went too far in that direction. We should have implemented kind of an old way and then made sure everybody was coming along with us to the new way. And, you know, we were frankly just trying to operate it really leanly and efficiently. Yeah. And that will come, but we need to, you know, handhold it and then bring it forward. Right. And I think that's our regret or mistake, is not putting enough resources to work hand in hand with the local transportation providers. We also had the understaffing of the contact center, which I said publicly was because we were using a DBE firm. They weren't providing benefits to the level that the staff wanted, so they had turnover issues, and so we went to a direct staffing model, and we'll meet the DBE credit through direct transportation services with the providers we're working with. But that, you know, if we had had our dedicated staff, we wouldn't have been using individuals in other parts of the country that weren't as familiar with, you know, Rhode Island program. So it's really those two areas.
So what do you think you'll be saying at the oversight committee hearing next week? What will your message be to that committee?
I will highlight all of those actions that we took. You know, at the hearing, we heard what the issues were from the facilities and transportation providers and what we took away as action items and corrective actions that we put in place literally the next day. We were, after the hearing, already on a call saying what we were going to do. And then I'll report what we've done and then report, you know, the statistics. I mean, we have to use data because the program's so large. We need to show data. And at the same time, we do have anecdotal stories, and we do have individuals that will also speak on our behalf, because it really shouldn't come from MTM. You know, it's the stakeholders that are most important, and I want people to hear from the stakeholders. You know, MTM is a very ethical, high standard company, and we want to do a great job here in Rhode Island, but it's, you know, the litmus test isn't going to be what we say, it's going to be what the people using the system and providing services in the system are going to say. And will everybody be 100% happy? No, I don't expect that. But I do think you'll hear that there are marked improvements and people beginning to see the improvements that we're bringing.
So those people you're talking about who are going to come and speak to their experience will be clients or people who are using your services, or administrators?
It could be a facility, it could be a transportation provider. We did set up meetings, weekly meetings in some cases, with each stakeholder group. So we have a member advisory committee, we have an ambulance meeting, we have the NEMET association meetings, long-term care, so hospitals. We're working with each subgroup because everybody has different needs and different issues, and so we want to make sure we're hearing from everybody and we're putting in the right processes to meet their needs.
So did the state have any clue you were going to roll out this lean model in Rhode Island?
Well, that's the way we responded to in the RFP. I think that, you know, it's like anything. You respond to a request for a proposal. You gather as much information as you can. You implement in 90 days. You know, it's really our responsibility. I'm not going to shift any responsibility. They called me, you know, before we went live and expressed that they felt that we had lack of resources and that we needed additional feet on the ground. And so, you know, they did their job. They called me. And so I think our response just wasn't fast enough. And also I think we still just underestimated the level of handholding some of these providers required. And, you know, that's not to put blame on them.
Right.
And that's not to say that, you know, they bear any of that responsibility, but it's, we underestimated it.
Right. Were there performance targets you had to meet before the thing started?
We have performance requirements. There's liquidated damages in the contract. We expect to be held accountable. We expect there'll be a penalty. We know there will be, you know, we're, you know, again, we want to provide good service. If we deserve an LD, we deserve an LD, and I'm not going to shirk our responsibility or complain about that.
Yeah.
Have you been in Rhode Island since January, or?
I've been here just about every week, yes. And then my staff have been here since November. And, okay. You know, we have a large corporate resource group here that are working, you know, all hours of the day, open hours, office hours, training, meeting with facilities. It's actually, you know, it's been really nice to see the team rise to the occasion and address the issues and turn around things quickly.
How many states are you in?
Over 30 states.
Over 30?
Yes. Huh. Yeah, we have over 2,500 employees.
And when did you start out?
Our company?
Yeah.
Or the project? The company started in 1995.
Yeah.
So it is a family business, privately held. My parents started it in 95.
Really?
Yes.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So you grew up with it?
You know, they didn't start it until I was in college.
Okay.
So I didn't really know what they were doing in that back office, you know, putting out their 401k money.
What were they doing before they started the company?
My dad was working in healthcare. He worked actually for Blue Cross Blue Shield and contracting. Huh. And my stepmom was in social services.
Interesting.
So they saw a gap. They actually saw that transportation wasn't managed, that there wasn't oversight.
Right.
And they, you know, really saw that this opportunity with Medicaid in Missouri, and they started the business. And so it's been, you know, it's a tough business. It's transportation. It's a lot of people involved, a lot of stakeholder groups. And then, you know, we're operating in a risk-based management model. So it's a good challenge, but one that we love to serve, and we love taking people to their appointments and getting them, you know, to places that they really need to go to ensure that they have good healthcare access.
Did the numbers in Rhode Island surprise you at all, the number of people using this service or anything like that?
No.
Demographically, it's different from other states.
It is different, you know,
yeah.
The long-term care.
Yeah.
And, but the other parts of the program really aren't that different. You know, there's a large substance treatment program here, but that's not unlike a lot of states now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, but you know, there is a lot of utilization. We operate a very similar program in DC, and so one of the people in on the ground here is from DC. So we're bringing a lot of what we've set up there. Every program's different.
Right.
Every program is different, and you have to tweak your model to meet the needs of the individual program, and that's what we've done.
Yeah. So how do you go back, how do you transition from the model you're now using back to a leaner model?
Well, I think it really comes from that, those tools like the facility portal, which the facilities are very excited about. You know, for them just to call in, give us the same data, they could have just entered in directly, and they want to do it when they're not busy or after hours and all these things. So they did say they're excited about that. And then training the transportation providers on the technology tools that we have available for them. And that's how we'll get there. So it's not, and we're not gonna cut and run or just, you know, disable things. We want this to be smooth from here forward. We don't wanna go through any other bumps. I mean, this was enough.
Yeah.
We want to transition, want anything we do from here forward to be well thought out and organized.
Now you've been bounced in Arkansas.
We, you know, that's been brought up, and I think, you know, that's really a unique situation where the contract was awarded and implemented in a very short time frame. And, you know, hindsight 2020, we should have not entered into that contract. You know, we had a incumbent provider who was operating the service lose the contract, and they were actually the operator with the vehicles, and so they just parked their vehicles. And if it had been 90 days, we could have recovered from that, but with a 5-day implementation, you don't have the ability in a rural area of a state to bring in new assets and to be providing those trips. So just given that short window, it wasn't set up for success. And you know, in hindsight, we've changed our corporate policy. We require 90-day implementations going forward.
Yeah.
Just bad timing.
Yeah.